Welcome to the Everyday Board Game Podcast with Daniel.
And Daniel.
And welcome. We are doing a double ender episode right now. We're doing two back to back, but that's because we have a Halloween holiday, whatever you want to call it. We have one coming up really soon, and we wanted to get this episode ready that we had a chance to film. Yeah. So, and it wouldn't be a holiday or a Halloween without us doing a top 8 debate of the top 8
horror games.
So if you go to Board Game Geek, which is what we did, we go to boardgamegeek.com, we search a specific category, this time horror games, and we rank them by the geek rating, and we pick the top 8 games that Daniel and I have both played to determine which one of those 8 are the best.
Now, there is a caveat on what we've done that I need to explain here if you do go and search this out for yourself. So, as we said earlier, that all games that we played, well, we've made a rule in the past that we're keeping to now. If the games have the same theme, in a sense, from the same company with slightly different rule sets, we eliminate them.
Or if they're like series of games, something like that.
So Mansions of Madness 2nd Edition, since it was the higher ranked game, stayed on our list. Whereas both Eldritch Horror and Arkham Horror have been eliminated. Both their Fantasy Flight games based on the Arkham series lore. And especially when it came to like Eldritch Horror and Arkham Horror, they play similar. Yeah. But we wanted to do the same thing for... We don't want to argue too much H.P. Lovecraft in a sense. One of the games that would have been on our list was Cthulhu Death May Die, because it's a CMON game. Plays completely different lore in a sense than, say, Arkham Horror or Eldritch Horror or Mansions of Madness, but you've never played it, so that's why it didn't make our list.
Right, and we feel that we can't make a fair argument for the games if we have not played it. So
exactly.
Every one of these games we've had to have at least played once. Some of them we like, some of them we don't.
We have an understanding of how it works.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, so if we played it once and we're like, no, like we still don't understand it, then we'll still eliminate it. If it's not considered fair. So, if some of your favorites are not included in this, that's okay. We put a poll on Facebook, on the Board Game Revolution community. And you can vote and add in any of your other favorites as well. And also make your argument why some should not be on the list.
And it's our audience participation on there. It's important. Because it's also our tiebreaker. When Daniel cannot come up with which is the better game... Your votes decide who moves on.
That's exactly right. Yeah, so we're not going to spend too much time talking about it. Most of our viewers have seen our top 8 debates, know what we do, and are going with it. But it has been a while since we recorded, so we're going to recap for our own purposes. Let's talk about the 5 categories that we're going to be debating off of for this.
All right, you want to go ahead and go first?
Yeah, our first category that we do, it's kind of like a best of 5 option. So we have 5 categories. First one is ease of play. That is
broken down into 3 subcategories.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So when we're talking ease of play, we mean first off the simplicity and the familiarity of the mechanisms. So if all of the mechanisms are completely different and some that we haven't seen and they're really complex and fairly convoluted, then that's a detractor. Whereas something that's like, oh, this is based on Yahtzee, except it has this variable. Okay, then that might get people easier to understand it and easier to play it, and thus easier into the game. Also, likelihood for AP prone. AP stands for analysis paralysis. How likely is somebody going to take their turn spending multiple minutes just staring at their cards, like breaking their brain,
trying to
mid-maxing, or just trying to like consider all options, you know? Like, you see, like, the people playing chess, like, just 2 guys staring at pieces on a board, not having a bit of fun. That's a detractor for ease of play.
I agree.
And also the likelihood to initially getting it to the table, whether that's how easy it is to teach somebody who's new, and also the theme, too. We take that into factor.
Or the familiarity of the mechanism that we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
Hey, this is a worker placement game. Some people are going to jump at the shot to play a worker placement game.
Yeah. It's like, it's like, you want to play this game about rolling dice about gingerbread men? It's kind of like Speed Yahtzee. Oh, okay. I now know how to play.
Yeah. So that's ease of play. The next topic that we go through on these criteria is replay value. the length and the time of its scaling, as well as how well it scales. So is it relatively the same time frame if between a 2- and 4-player game? We're okay with the time being increasing if you're adding players, but as long as it stays tight in that window. If it goes from a 30-minute game to an hour game when you double the amount of players, that's fine. But if it goes from a 30-minute game to a 3-hour game, depending on the number of players, that's not so fine. As well as the length of the time. So are you able to get it multiple times to the table? The minimum number of plays, and what we mean by that is how many times do you need to play the game to get the full experience? When we're talking about a game, let's say Wingspan, we're not going to say see all the cards that are in Wingspan, so right. We have to play a lot more times. You basically know how to play the game, but there's different variations of how you would play that game.
Yep.
So it would have a high number, a minimum number of plays. So instead of being like 4 or 2, it's going to be like 10, 12, 13 before you see the full number of plays. Mm-hmm. As well as expandability. And this is where something we had to define. Does it already have existing expansions? Does it have up to 1 possible future expansions? If we believe there's going to be future, in this case, space-based, it has a volume 1. We're assuming there's going to be a volume 2 mm-hmm. and many more ahead of that. We're just going to give it just the first one that we believe is going to happen. Or if expansions have been confirmed by the designer or the publishers along the lines of, say, Wingspan again. Jamie Stegmaier and Elizabeth Hargrave have said they want to make an expansion for every continent. So we're going to go ahead and say this is confirmed by them. So we're expecting 6 more expansions to this game.
Yeah. And then also one more piece of clarification on that. We do not include promos. As we've discussed many times before, a promo does not count as an expansion. It's a way to intrigue you to play the game, not so much to give you additional content.
And not just that, when we're talking about expansions, there are games that you can go out and buy. Promos are things that you sometimes have to go out and hunt. Sometimes there's promos for like Tabletop Day when that was a thing.
Yep.
There's also promos if you go to a certain convention or if you back like the Dice Tower Kickstarter.
Yep.
It's something that you have to go out and hunt, whereas expansions, you can go to your friendly neighborhood game store and pick it up.
Yep. Cool. And then our next category that we debate on is meaningful choices. Meaningful choices breaks down into how your strategy impacts other players. Like, are you playing a multiplayer solitaire game? You know, how, what do I do in the game that affects you
in your strategy,
and what would change my strategy based on that? That's a very meaningful choice. How well you can impact the long-term strategy of your play. Is the first couple turns going to really matter at the end of the game, or am I going to have to play fairly tactically, or do I have to set myself up, or am I just playing random? Which leads me to the last one, non-arbitrary choices. If you have a game where every card in your hand doesn't help you, well, then you just pick a random thing. Or if you have to roll dice for your choices, that's an arbitrary choice, and those are normally looked on badly. Or
and you're beholden to luck.
And you're beholden to luck. But then that also includes games where everything is so good that you don't have a meaningful choice, because everything will be awesome regardless of what you play. Yeah. So you shuffle your hand and play a card.
This is going to help me. So, you blocked me from that spot. Well, I'll just go over here and do this. Yeah,
yep.
It's an arbitrary choice because you have a long-term strategy. And if an arbitrary choice doesn't impact your long-term strategy, then is it really a really good choice, a meaningful choice?
Yeah, it's not a choice. Yeah, exactly. Cool.
Next on our list here is game immersion. And what we mean by that is, does the theme match the mechanism? I know I've been harping the Stonemaier games, but these are the easiest ones to go with. Viticulture. Your workers are going out there planting your fields, doing all this. It does feel like you're controlling a vineyard. And so it matches the mechanism. Or is it dice chucking, kind of a la Thanos Rising? Kind of theme there, but it's all dependent upon how your dice rolls. So it kind of matches and it kind of doesn't.
Right. Exactly.
Player interaction. And what we mean by player interaction, not so much as what we were talking about in Meaningful Choice, where it's impacting other people's strategies, but more so the table talk, the, you know, razzing each other, making fun of each other, cursing each other out for going to that spot that you wanted, and, you know, when you're playing a co-op and like, hey, we need this taken care of if we're playing like Pandemic. Hey, the medic needs to go over here to Asia and start clearing that out or some bad stuff is going to happen. Or, hey, why don't you go control South America, take care of that. I'll worry about up here. We've got to try to prevent this before an outbreak right. happens, that sort of stuff. That makes good player interaction. That makes you more immersive into the game because you're trying to see what's going on.
Or another good example is like if you were playing a character that was the doctor and I feel like you're not healing somebody, it's like, sir, doctor, come on. Mr. Daniel, the doctor, you need to go heal them now. How likely you are to take on that role and be immersed in the theme of the game.
Or in Journeys to Middle Earth.
Yep.
If you're playing Legolas, are you really like, I'm going to go shoot this thing and I'm going to go shoot this thing. I'm not Daniel. I'm Legolas.
Yeah, exactly.
That it gets you into the game. It gives you, immerse you. And this works for well for like solo games too.
Yeah.
Are you this character you're controlling? Are you really getting into it? It's like, ooh,
yeah.
I'm a police officer. Maybe I should go take care of this stuff over here.
Exactly. So I'm going to roll dice randomly over here, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to plan my turn on where to aim 4 turns before. No, that's not. It's not what happens.
And then, of course, finally in game immersion is the memorable moments, the thing that are going to make you stand up and get out of your chair yep. and shout. If you're in a comic shop playing board games and you go, yes, because you did something well and make everybody turn their head, that's a memorable moment because it's something that stays in your memory.
Yeah, and we try to, of course, this is always a hard one for us because a lot of these games we have memorable moments. But we also try to see which game can cater to those memorable moments easier. Yeah. Yep. It's not so much which ones we've had, because I've had stand-up moments in a lot of awful games, but, we remember them because they're bad, but which ones lead to that dynamics.
Yeah.
And our last category that we go off of is art and production, which we know is subjective, but some of them can be compared fairly easily. The first one is quality of... Yep, quality of the art.
What is the one thing you hate about the new Stonemaier game, Pendulum? What is the one thing that detracts from you?
The pieces?
No, the game board. You said you
had it looks busy.
So much problem when you looked at the game board. And that's part of this.
It looked very busy, and I question how good that will help. So we have art, which, is always debatable.
It's very subjective, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, like, if we have a game that doesn't have art versus a game that has very pretty art, we can tell which one is better. Pieces and components, that's quality. That doesn't necessarily mean...
Because it has more pieces doesn't mean it's going to be better. It's more along the lines. Better quality and components. What are going to last longer?
Yeah, exactly. If I have meeples that are representing characters and I also have miniatures representing a character in the other one, that's worth noting. And then finally, the design. And that's specifically the graphic design that we choose, and that's how does the choices made by the person who laid out the board and laid out the cards help you be able to play because of how clear that is. A good example of that is the iconography in Seven Wonders Duel. We always argue that it's like those icons are very clear what they do.
Yeah,
like you have either resources or you have warfare. You know what the icons mean. So, how does that matter? That's what matters. So,
those are our criteria, and as I mentioned at the top of this, the fan vote is our tiebreaker. So, if you want to take part in these debates, join us on Board Game Revolution, where we always put up the poll, and we're going to get right into that in a minute.
Yeah, so let's go into the poll right now, and let's talk about the games that were added on by our viewers, and let's talk about them. Now, some of them... One or most of us haven't, or either of us haven't played, and some of them, even if they would have normally made lists, they probably just weren't ranked high enough on Board Game Geek. But if they were, they still got the votes. We want to recognize that. So the top one that I have here listed was added by Matej, I believe is how you pronounce his name, and that is Fury of Dracula with 6 votes.
Funny, I actually own this game. I haven't played it.
Yep, and I have never played it. But I know it's based off of a game I do enjoy, so.
Oh, yeah? What game is that?
The Scotland Yard.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Yeah, Scotland Yard laid the groundwork for the hidden movement thing that Fury of Dracula mostly uses. Yeah. So
the next next game on our list here was added by Brian, and that is Deep Madness. Honestly, I'm not going to lie, I've never heard of it.
Nope, neither have I. But it has 5 votes, so Brian, clearly your people agree with you.
You're not alone, yeah.
Yeah. Evan added with 3 votes Camp Grizzly, which I also haven't heard of.
Yeah, exactly. Some of these games that they're coming up with, I'm like, oh, this is intriguing. Never heard of it.
Yeah. Are you writing them down so we can... I wonder how many of these were Kickstarters. I'm writing
the votes down for we have our tiebreakers as we're going, but yeah.
Okay, cool.
So the next one added on the list here is by Fabiano, which, sorry if I really ruined that name, and it's called Monster Slaughter, another game.
Monster Slaughter, yep, with 3 votes. Added by Jan with 2 votes is Eldritch Horror, which we did clarify earlier. It was high enough to rank
been,
on it.
Yeah, it would have been on the, I think, 3? Yeah, it would have been number 3.
Yep, but we decided to just include it with the Mansions of Madness.
Yep. So the next one on our list is added by our mutual friend Courtney, and she put Betrayal of House on the Hill.
Yep, which... So we have Betrayal Legacy as number 8 on our list, which we'll be talking about in a bit.
Which would have eliminated Betrayal and House on the Hill because of that.
Yeah.
And based on the rankings here, it would have been number 9 anyways.
Yep. Also with 2 votes. So couldn't agree more, Courtney. Thank you. Added by Francois, we have with 1 vote, Abomination, The Heir of Frankenstein, which I know is one that you're quite fond of.
I do enjoy the game. I understand why some people don't, and that's fine, but I really enjoy the game. And I'll talk about it a little bit later.
I wonder if it might come up in a certain list. We'll talk. Yeah.
All right, and Brian also added A Touch of Evil, another game I'm not too familiar with.
I'm familiar with this one. This one was added. This one has real photos of people on the cover.
I have seen that.
Yeah, I think they played it, or they played something similar to it on Tabletop. And it's from a company that was kind of known for this. They made quite a few games that were horror-themed and all sorts of silly stuff. Brian, that had 1 vote. Also with 1 vote by Tracy, she said, Kingdom Death Monster.
I've heard of this one. Never played it.
Yep. So there we go.
And the last one on my list here is added again by Brian, Resident Evil 2. Another one I have heard of, I just haven't played it.
Yeah. Yeah, same thing. So let's talk about the comments that were included with these. And there's only a few, but Derald, I'm not sure if I pronounce, as always, we apologize for pronunciations. Is it the best?
He was wanting clarification based on what we
do. Yeah, but I think it's important that we bring it up too. Is it the best game based with a horror theme, or the best at conveying a horror experience? Because I think that's going to be part of our arguments too.
I agree. And like he says, those are 2 very different questions. And as I was reiterating, and also putting a comment up there, is that we're specifically getting these from the horror category at BGG. So
yes.
That's where we're getting it from.
Exactly.
Up to interpretation how you want to take it.
Now, what we'll probably explain while we're doing this is, for game immersion, that does definitely be, or that's definitely part of the which one is the most immersive, which one conveys the experience the best.
And the other comment that we had on here was just asking questions about Horrified. That's
really it. Yep. So, and which we are definitely going to be talking about later. So, shall we talk about the top 8 before we get into our honorable mentions?
Yes. Let's go ahead and start doing that.
Okay. So, as always, we're going to go through the top 8. We have the highest seeded, which is the highest ranked on BoardGameGeek, ranked against the lowest seeded. That is currently Nemesis versus Betrayal Legacy.
And as well, our 2 seed facing our 7 seed is Mansions of Madness, 2nd edition, going up against One Night Ultimate Werewolf.
That'll be a very interesting argument.
Oh, God, I hope I don't get One Night.
Then we have number 3, Dead of Winter, versus our number 6 seed, Ghost Stories.
And finally, we have the number 4 seed, horrified, going up against the number 5 seed, Mysterium. And I don't know about you, that's my favorite bracket so far.
That's probably my favorite as well. Yeah.
I kind of like number 1. I think Nemesis more than you, but I really did enjoy Betrayal Legacy.
Oh, I loved Betrayal Legacy. So, yeah. I didn't care for Nemesis, but we're going to talk about that during the debate. It was okay. I didn't think it was what everybody was claiming it to be. But if you like it, that's all that matters. Let's talk about some honorable mentions. You and I tend to have some horror-themed games that we didn't include in this. And if you listen to our last episode that came out yesterday, if you're not watching this live, or 2 hours ago, if you are, we talked about the top 10 or the top Halloween go-to games. All of my honorable mentions were not part of that list.
All of my honorable mentions are part of that list.
Okay. Then why don't you go first, since it'll be more exciting.
I'm not going to go too much detail about them, because like I said, we talked about them just recently, so if you want to hear my thoughts on them, just go listen to the Chits and Giggle podcast about it. So my first honorable mention here, I've told it, and I'm going to still hark on it as much as I had problems with how it's ran. I love the game. Arkham Horror LCG is my first honorable mention. As I said earlier, get the same feel of Arkham Horror, Eldritch Horror, Mansions of Madness, but it plays so much quicker. And I love playing it solo. It's easy setup, clean up, quick, play solo. I really love the characters and how you're using them and the way the card plays work. Phenomenal game. That's all I need to say.
Cool. My number 3 honorable mention is a game that I mainly bought it for the art, and that's still kind of the reason I own it. It has some of the creepiest art in any game that I've seen, and it's absolutely wonderful. It has like 90 dice, and it's about going into these nightmares that you are having to deal with these monsters using these visions of dice. Do you know what? It's from Renegade Games.
Okay, it's a little different. I was thinking of I thought you didn't like that game, the Plaid Hat one, from Jerry Hawthorne.
Nope, yeah, not that one.
Is this one Coma Nuts?
No, I'm talking Lucidity.
Oh, Lucidity, okay.
Yeah, Lucidity. The art in that is absolutely phenomenal. It's one of the most gorgeous art, if you like that style. I mean, it's very dark and grim, but it's not graphic or anything. It's just, like, it's nightmare fuel. It's genuinely something that if you stare at too long, you're going to get uncomfortable. It's really great art. and the whole theme to it, it's a fairly simple and fairly abstracted dice game. But yeah, it turns out to be really neat because of how that ends up. So, Lucidity from Renegade Games is my number 3.
So, my second honorable mention was already mentioned. I'm not going to go too much on it. And the reason why I put these 3 games on this list is because these are the ones that actually give me that horror vibe. That's what I was trying to go with on this one, rather than Halloween games. Because Halloween games don't need to be horrific. They don't need to be scary.
Yeah.
It fits better, but it doesn't have to be. And so these ones, though, give me that horror. And so my number 2 is Abomination, Heir to Frankenstein.
Okay.
Worker placement, so that's always going to pique my interest because I love worker placement games. Again, it's based off the Frankenstein. It's a pseudo-sequel to the Frankenstein book that I enjoyed. It's a 100-year-old book, so it's going to have some flaws with it.
Mm-hmm.
It is a bit lucky, as mentioned earlier, but I do enjoy it, and I think it does give you that horror tension that you're wanting in a game. Do I go kill someone? Do I grave rob? Do I do this? Do I go teach? And knowing I've done all these horrific things, I'm also being threatened by this monstrosity that was made by Frankenstein himself, and then you got the captain who's trying to push his way in, trying to stop whatever's going on. So yeah, no, I get that tension from it, and I really enjoy it.
Yeah, cool. My number 2 honorable mention is a game that is probably like the lightest on the theme, but it is based off of a horror book, and throughout the game, you are trapped on a mountain trying to escape while slowly going insane. That is Mountains of Madness from Yellow Games and Rob Davio. I have it right up here. I rarely get to talk about this game, but the part that really sets it apart, it's mostly a fairly lighthearted game, But as your characters continuously go more and more insane, you draw these cards and they give you ridiculous actions that you have to do. Like, you have to ask everything in forms of questions, or you have to stand in the corner of the room, or you have
to be unintelligible.
Yeah, or you have to spell out numbers. Like,
or if the one time I played it, I had to hold everything without my thumb.
Yeah, you had to hold everything without your thumb. And then whenever this happens, you're not allowed to act like it happens. You're supposed to act like you don't notice you're doing this. And so you're going to be playing this cooperative game, and you're going to be seeing someone stand in the corner as they're trying to play with their cards of hands, like, conversing, like, normally. But they're just, it's like, but that's so weird that you're over, like, I mean, it's so thematic, and it's ridiculous and over the top. It's one of those games that rewards you for absurdity, but doesn't require that it happens, you know? Like, there's, like, a game, I think it's called, like, Quelf, where it's like, oh, put a shoe on your head, ha ha ha, it's funny. No, that's not funny. You're just, cards are telling you to be stupid. This is genuinely funny because you're trying to act like you're not doing what exactly you're doing. It's amazing.
So, there's two things about this one. First off, when you were describing it, I was like, you're really putting The Shining on here?
Right.
Because you're in a mountain.
Yeah, you're in a mountain. You're slowly going crazy. Yep.
And so, but like I said, the problem I had with The Shining, and that's why I did pick my honorable mentions, is it doesn't give that horror theme that you're expecting
from The Shining. It really doesn't.
I finally finished The Shining book, and I have to say, I was not a fan of it. I am a huge Stephen King fan.
Yeah.
And I listened to it on my, or read it on my Kindle. I could tell when it actually got good. It was after 62% of the book was already read.
Oof. Oof. Yeah, no, I mean, I get why he's famous. But at the same time, I mean, you can't make that many books and have them all be amazing.
Yeah, and people say it's one of his best books. I'm, in fact, enjoying the sequel to The Shining a lot more than I actually enjoyed The Shining. Dr. Sleep is amazing.
Yeah.
I'm having a great time with it, but that's for a story another level. Yeah. Though, I do have to say, I am actually listening to Mountains of Madness right now. On my Audible account, I wanted some spooky books and H.P. Lovecraft books. That,
oh, okay.
I don't like reading them, but I enjoy listening to them on my podcast or my Audible account.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually quite enjoyable to listen to.
Cool, I might have to check that out.
Read it, make it really good.
The only audiobook I've heard from Stephen King, I was hugely disappointed in, and
you read the weird one, and it's not. I'm not talking about the Stephen King book. I'm talking about.
Yeah.
H.P. Lovecraft's
Madness. Right, yeah, but I mean, like as far as
Legacy or something like that, they do like almost like a radio show type thing.
Okay. That's cool. Awesome.
And so, speaking of H.P. Lovecraft, my number one honorable mention did not make my go-to Halloween list unless it was an honorable mention, and that's because it's a bit long. And that is Eldritch Horror. Now, this is a phenomenal horror game. It does give you that creepiness as you're dealing with the cultists and you're pulling the card. And if you have some of the expansions where you're going into the dreamland or you're dealing with the Mountains of Madness in Antarctica, yeah, all that stuff is there. And it's good. I like it. You got the epic big bads. You got the old gods. You got Cthulhu and stuff like that. And again, based off Lovecraft, who's not a great guy. And we'll get more into that a little bit later. But it does give great atmospheric tones to it, and you do feel that tension, you do feel that horror, that's why I really enjoy it.
Yeah. And my number one, I don't think gets enough love for what it is, but it is one of the most immersive games, and that's because part of the immersion is the mechanism of the game. You are trapped in a forest, all but one player can't see. Only one player can see, and he's the one who's hunting you. And that's...
I know which one this is. I really do need to play this game.
Nyctophobia. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, what you're trying to do in this game, and I think what a lot of people are doing, is that the hunter who's hunting the other people, they're trying to make it through this maze of things that they can't see, and they're trying to memorize, they're trying to figure out where everybody is, stuff may shift around, chaos is going to happen... you're not trying to defeat them because the hunter is incredibly powerful in this game. But as that one player who's helping everybody, and Kanzi, they're the all versus one player. They're really trying to set the tone for the game. They're not trying to necessarily end the game super fast because they can. They're trying to give them a really dark sense of what's happening. And what makes this really neat is that if you move your piece onto a spot containing the hunter, there you're going to get damaged. And that's an incredibly intense feeling. But here's the thing. They cannot hunt and attack you directly. You have to move onto their space. So every single move you make has that level of tension. You're like, all right, I'm going to move north. Let's hope. And you move, it's like, you're fine. Okay. Phew. It's so intense. It's so good. It really does give you that. The only reason I don't play it as much is the group that I normally play with, one of our players really is just uncomfortable with the stuff block in their eyes. So I get that, but I'm not. And so I've only ever played the Hunter.
Usually you just have to take off your glasses and you can't
see. I can't see anymore all of a sudden. Yeah. I'm already colorblind. Like, let's just add the blurry vision to it. And so, you know, no, I love the concept of this. It got me so excited as soon as I heard about it. Anyway, I won't belabor it anymore. If that was ranked high enough, I would have very strong arguments for it. We are going to be starting our top 8 debate for the top 8 horror-themed board games.
All right, as always, we start with the 1 versus 8. We go to the 2 versus 7 and so forth. They will be reseeded after this first round, but we are doing something new. Since you know it's season 2, we got to add something new. We're actually going to be drawing the games from the hat, and even if we don't like the game, we have to argue for it if we draw it.
Yep, this will be interesting. We're going to try this brand new idea. We love this idea because we have played it, and we're going to try our best to argue for it, but we'll see what we can. It's a debate for a reason. All right, here we go.
So the first one is what Daniel over there has to argue.
So this is either going to be Betrayal Legacy or Nemesis.
All right. Let's see what it is. Did I put the right ones in?
already a blooper. You know, we could just flip a coin.
Oh, I got this. It's right here.
All right, here we go. The corrector. We built up so much suspense for that.
And I messed up. Yeah, my bad.
It's all right. It happens.
All right, you want to know which one you got?
That would help my argument, yes. Betrayal Legacy. Let's do it. I'm ready to start right now. Because you and I have all... We're going to avoid spoilers.
This actually worked out in our favors.
Yeah. No, we're going to avoid spoilers as best as we can. But,
yes, we're going to avoid spoilers as best we can. I do have arguments about the game against Betrayal Legacy.
Yes.
That are spoiler-free.
Yeah.
As well as pros.
I feel like we should have like a 2-minute timer for like opening arguments and responses. we should have
maybe
like
a season 3, we'll start adding timers to it.
Right, exactly. So Betrayal Legacy.
We will try to make this quick and brief, this way we're not on a 3-hour podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Betrayal Legacy.
Go ahead and start.
That is, first off, a legacy game that you and I have played through completion with a group of ours. It is... takes place over 300 years, starting at the year 1666, if I'm not mistaken, and going up until, like, I think 2016. I'm probably wrong on those dates, but it's something to that effect. Every time you play it, it's a new generation of people that are going back to the cabin.
Same family. You're playing the same family that you've created the whole way. It's just different generations of that family.
Yep, which makes sense as far as it goes for horror movies and horror theme. That is a very common trope involved with it. But not only that, that explains why the mechanisms of Betrayal, House on the Hill, are incorporated into it, is that every generation that passes, that you go back to that cabin drawn in for a different reason, something totally different is going to happen. What makes this game so good is it took everything that they learned from Betrayal, House on the Hill, making 50 scenarios, which some were broken, some weren't, then they added another 50 scenarios with their expansion with the Widow's Walk. And then they added 50 more expansions by making the Baldur's Gate version of it.
Yeah.
They took everything that they learned from this and created an incredibly rich storyline that took place over these series of games. And then
it's a phenomenal game.
Yeah, it really is up there as one of my favorite Legacy games. I would say it's probably number two as far as Legacy games go. That's just a quick guess. Pandemic Legacy is still my favorite. Betrayal was definitely up there. And Betrayal at House on the Hill is not one of my favorite games.
I'm trying to think how many Legacy games I've played. And of course, I've played Pandemic Legacy. We're in the middle of Charterstone. We played Betrayal.
Rise of Queensdale.
I'm in the middle of Charterstone. We also have
Rise of Queensdale.
Risk Legacy. That we haven't been able to play because, you know.
Yeah, obvious reasons.
2020.
Yep. 2020. But, I mean, as far as Legacy goes, it stands on its own. It takes an already really decent good game that a lot of people love, and that might have been the critical factor that convinced them to be Legacy fans. Rob Davio did a really good job with it.
He did a phenomenal job with it. And, you want to hear my cons for Betrayal Legacy?
Almost. Over the whole course of the game, though, they had some of the most memorable moments in all of gaming that we've had.
Hey, honest to God. Honestly, let me say this real quick before I go into my cons and you finish your thought here. When you speak of memorable moments, it made me think, I don't want to get into spoiler, but there's a certain thing that you got to do each time. You have to come up with a chant for it.
Yes.
That was probably one of my favorite things.
Yep.
That or we kept passing this certain thing around without, you know, disrespecting it. And it was just like the funniest thing. Like the last person to show up has to take care of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that became like an ongoing thing with us as we were unpacking the box. Like it would just suddenly appear in front of somebody without them noticing. Like, oh, come on. Really? Like it was so good. And then all of the mechanisms that they added into it, there was stuff that's different from Betrayal that you only could have done through a storyline. Like there's no way that if you played a one-off scenario that was triggered randomly by the game, that you could have done some of the things that they included with it. And it just worked out really well. I still am in love with it. I would gladly play it again. And I like how it's nice about replayable.
It, just a pro for it. You can play it after you're done with it. It's still a playable game. It's your own version of Betrayal Legacy. And I think that's a good thing that Legacy games are doing. Because with the Pandemic Legacy games, once you're done playing it, you're done. But if you want to go back to it, you can.
Right. Exactly. No, I couldn't agree more. I adored it. It was an awesome game. I'll explain the cons for Nemesis later.
And then we'll get into Nemesis here in a minute.
Yep.
But here's my cons for Betrayal Legacy that I've written down here.
Okay.
You've mentioned that they did learn from some of the stuff in the other games, though it does fall into the same problem at times when it comes to haunts.
Sure.
Sometimes those haunts are weighed heavily to one side, whether it's weighed heavily to the traitor side or it's weighed heavily to the player side. And that's a big issue, especially when you're coming to a Legacy game, that it could take you out of it. That's one of the main issues of it. Other than that, I can't fault it, like you said. Another big thing about it is the downtime. There can, especially if you're playing a full five-player game, there's four other people that you got to wait to take their turn before you get back to your turn and figure out what you're trying to do. That's one of the flaws that, again, Betrayal and the House on the Hill had as well. So they didn't fix all the flaws from Betrayal on the House on the Hill. They've done some good stuff about it, but then they also added an extra floor.
Yeah, exactly.
So when you're exploring the house, it could take a little while.
Sure.
As well as, because of it's a Legacy game, it's hard to get a group together. Now, what I liked about this, and I'm arguing against what I'm trying to argue against, is that what's good about this Legacy game compared to other ones is it allowed the drop-in, drop-out feature very simply. If, say, our buddy Bryce can join for 1 week and we're going to play it, and then he has to drop out because family issues or something like that, we can still play it without his family being involved in this.
Right, exactly.
So that is a good one, but it is a con trying to get the same group together. It took us a while to actually play it all the way through for that reason.
Which is true for any Legacy game, really.
Yeah, that's just a con to most Legacy games in general. Yeah. It's a con to Gloomhaven. Because I'm playing the campaign, and because of 2020, I haven't been able to finish the campaign.
Sure. Yep. That makes sense.
Yeah, so let's move on to Nemesis.
Okay. Your opening
There's
argument.
There's a reason why it's number one on the horror game. And that's because it gives you that feel of Alien, which is a phenomenal movie. And people like it for that reason. It does give you that feel. It's a grandiose game. It's big. It's massive. There's a lot going on. Yes, there's problems with it, including one of my cons that I have on here. There's a lot to keep up with.
A lot of upkeep, yep.
There is tension. That's what you want from a horror game. And there's tension because not only are you worrying about the creatures coming out after you, you're also trying to figure out what the other two players are up to, because they're more than likely is a hidden betrayer. You got your own thing that you want to accomplish, as well as trying to figure out what the other players are doing. I see you're hanging out over there by the pilot's office. What are you trying to do? We need to get back to Earth. What? Why do you keep messing with stuff? Do I need to come over there and see what you're doing? Or do I need to go fix the thing over here? This way we can get there. And I do like that. It does have some memorable moments. There are some issues with it, but I don't know which game I like more on this list. I really enjoyed Betrayal Legacy. I really enjoyed Nemesis. We may have to go into the breakdown.
Yeah, so my counter-argument or the cons for Nemesis, which there's a few on my end. Now, I don't want it to seem like I hate it, because I didn't hate it. I actually didn't mind it while playing. It's just it fell really flat when I played it, because I don't know if it was just because I don't know the source material, because I haven't seen the Aliens movies, so I don't really know much about it. But if that's all the legs that it has to stand on, you know, if I was a fan of the movies, if that is required to be a fan of the game, then that...
Now, that's where people would argue against you, because right. There's a lot of people who are a fan of the game that don't like the movie either.
Okay.
I see it all the time, like on Dice Tower and stuff like that.
Sure, because I haven't seen the movies, and I don't know if that's the reason it fell flat for me, but I was actually kind of disappointed in the game, because a lot of my turns felt like just I did nothing. It was very often where I would be like, okay, I guess I'll go this way. Because there's a monster this way, and I want to stay away.
It was the first time we ever played it. We were learning the game. A learning game can sometimes take you out of a game.
Right, and I feel like that was a part of it. But also at the same time, I get that, but I'm also not hugely excited to try it again. You know, there was nothing in it that specifically made me excited to try it.
You just don't like really long games. You want more bang for your buck, shorter, tighter games that play better. And I think a big part of it too, it's not enough Euro for you.
Well, I mean, but there wasn't many memorable moments. Like, I remember the monster coming around and me kind of sending him outward, but I feel like there was a lot of ways where you could, like...
Well, in all honesty, if we're arguing this, Betrayal Legacy is going to win memorable moments just for the simple fact that it's a legacy game.
Right, but true.
You get over a series, a number of things, while things are opening up and things are happening that right. make it more memorable, because actions you make in the game change the game.
Yeah, I mean, I want to give Nemesis its fair benefit of the doubt, just because I had a bad experience. It wasn't, like, heartbreaking experience. It really wasn't. I didn't mind it. And I know I said I would play it again. I just wasn't impressed with it when I played. So
I'm already giving two to Betrayal Legacy, in all honesty, if we go through the breakdown. I'm giving Ease of Play and Game Immersion to it, honestly.
Okay. Then let's...
And the reason being sure. those two I give to it is simplicity and familiarity of the mechanism. There's nothing out there really like Nemesis, how you have to play that game as...
Right.
Thoroughly as it is.
Yeah, there's a lot of really fiddly.
It's pretty simple to pick up.
I would say Meaningful Choices definitely goes to Nemesis as well. Art and Production.
Yeah, Art and Production and Meaningful Choice. So the one we have to talk about is Replay Value.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's where it's going to get a little tricky.
Mm-hmm.
Length of time and scaling level. They both are fairly long games at times.
Right.
I would have to say Betrayal Legacy scales better than Nemesis?
Yeah. 2 to 5, because, and I think Nemesis is 2 to 4,
well, not
right?
just that. It doesn't extend too much time, as we talked about earlier. Plus, it's got the drop-in, drop-out, which is nice. So I could play a 3-player game, I could play a 4-player game, I could play a 5-player game. Real simple.
Yeah.
Minimum number of plays to get the full experience?
Yeah. That's obviously Betrayal, because
it is and it isn't, because Nemesis is very modular. things that we're doing doesn't necessarily are the same time you're going to play the next time.
Yeah, but
there's a lot of modular to it in the box. But, yeah, minimum number of plays, I would have to give it to Control of Legacy. The only one I would give Nemesis is the expandability. They had a whole massive standalone expansion Kickstarter.
Right. And then T. Clark added in some comments about it. He said he's seen some solo play videos of Nemesis, and just watching felt that claustrophobic tension, mostly from just knowing that things can go from perfectly fine to terribly wrong in the back or on the back of a single dice roll. And you have to scramble to get yourself out of a really nasty situation. I've seen things go or get so bad from my initial reaction was game over, man, game over. And I agree with that, to an extent. So,
hold on real quick before you get into it. That game over, man, game over is actually a quote from Aliens.
Yeah. Game over, man, game over. That's really good, actually. That's a solid reference. I didn't realize that. But no, I mean, yeah, I don't disagree with that, but it's just, I don't think it leads into the immersion that Betrayal Legacy did. I'm not saying it's not immersive.
The problem with what we're arguing here is we're arguing a legacy game against the standalone game that's meant to be played the one time and then pick up different, where this one is meant to be played over a campaign. So that's where a lot of that issue is going to come in when it comes to the game immersion side of it. Mm-hmm. Now, if it looks like it probably will, by my numbers here, Betrayal Legacy is moving on. However, there is something that could actually dethrone it when we come to the game immersion side of it.
Oh, absolutely. There is more than a few games in here that can beat it with immersion.
I'm going to go ahead and let's call it a wash, this way we can move on. Or not a wash, but let's call it a game, and based on our criteria, Betrayal Legacy moves on. Betrayal Legacy moves
That's on. Correct. So Betrayal Legacy will go on.
And it will face the highest seed that moves on in the next couple arguments.
Cool. All right. So next one, we have Mansions of Madness versus our number 7 seed, One Night Ultimate Werewolf. And we will have to argue whichever one is picked. Daniel, you will mix those up in your hat. Whichever one you pick, you will argue for.
So let's move that over there. All right, mix it up, and the one that gets drawn is my argument. And you're hoping for the one I don't want, huh?
No, I'm okay with either one. I like both.
All right, let's move that down there real quick. Put that over there, and let's see what I am arguing. Oh, thank God.
You are arguing, I'm assuming, Mansions of Madness? Okay, cool. Opening argument, sir.
My opening argument's with Mansions of Madness. One, it's a better game.
Darn it. Solid argument.
In all honesty, I am going to take my bias out of this. For those of you who are familiar with us, I do not like social fiction games. I'm not a huge fan of them.
Right. So then take your bias out of it.
And do Mansions of Madness 2nd Edition. The pros for it, for me personally, is one, I do agree. I think it is a better game because there's more mechanism to it other than trying to figure out who the werewolf is. I do like it because of the app. I think the app really enhances this game because it gets rid of some of that fiddly stuff that you would get in some of the Arkham Horror style games.
Okay.
And it is very a thematic game. You do get that tension. You get that darkness, especially when I've played the second scenario where you're trying to run away from a horde, a mob that are going to destroy you. And you're trying to get out of Innsmouth and, survive. There is those memorable moments where me and our mutual friend Bryce, where I'm just like, oh my God, we're going to die. We got to keep moving. We got to get away. When you're trying to deal with cultists in the first scenario, and it's like, do I go over there and talk to that guy? Because there's some strange noises coming outside that door. It really does. As much as I hark on that I love the LCG, as much as I like the Eldritch Horror game, this to me is the most thematic Arkham Horror game out there, and probably one of my favorites, if not my favorite Arkham Horror game.
Yeah.
A lot of it has to do with the app. I'm not going to lie about it. And that's also one of my comps. cons for this game, and I'm not
sure. Remember, you don't have to argue the cons because you're arguing pros right now.
But I'm already going to throw it out there, is just how long will the app be supported? That's a big thing about any app integrated games, mm-hmm. is how long will that app be supported? However, I find this game to be intriguing. It's not really that easy to play, but it's not that hard to play when it comes to, say, Eldritch Horror or Arkham Horror or any of those other games. It's pretty simple because the app helps you out. It teaches you the game as you're playing it in the first scenario. And I think that's a phenomenal way to teach these kind of games, especially how massive they are. Then you look at the minis, you look at the bosses, you look at the fights that you're going through. I think it's a really good thematic game, especially when you want that horror feel.
Yep.
I don't get that when I'm playing One Night Ultimate Werewolf.
Right, but you also... I don't disagree with you, necessarily. But you... I know part of it is the social deduction takes you out of it. And that's a very fair reason, because that's not... You're not the only one... You're not the only one who agrees with that. So, the cons for Mansions of Madness. First off, it's based off of H.P. Lovecraft stuff. Questionable source material. It's a simple game, but it's a massive box. And it's a huge production value, so that deters some people. Not too big of a deal for me, but I get why some people would do that. But Mansions of Madness is hugely just based off of fairly random chance. You do have to go into like the different rooms. You don't really know what you're doing. I forget, is Mansions of Madness the dice one? Does it have the dice in it? How do you perform checks?
It does have some dice, but most of the puzzles are done through the app.
Okay, not the puzzles, though, but for, like, checks, fighting against monsters, you roll dice, right?
I believe so, yeah. There is dice that you gotta roll successes.
So there's that random part of it. Yeah, but, I mean, it's not that big of a deal. Like, that's why I prefer, like, the Journeys to Middle-Earth better than Mansions of Madness. Not a huge thing, but it's just that...
Plus, the source material is not so creepy. So much based on a creep.
Yeah, exactly. So those are just my counterpoints that I wanted to make. One Night Ultimate Werewolf is essentially this, and the Resistance are like the two quintessential social deduction games right now. It's based off of Werewolf, which is essentially Mafia, and there's hundreds of people who play them online, play games of Werewolf, and they play versions like this because it's a quick... Like, I want to have that experience so concentrated in such a small period of time, like 4 or 5 minutes, that it makes it interesting. One of the pros that makes it really neat is that the One Night Ultimate Werewolf app has an app that's narrated by Eric Summerer of the Dice Tower, and he's a great narrator as far as that goes. And so when everybody's asleep and he's announcing what the different roles do, it's a very immersive experience because you're listening, you're waiting, you know, it's like, huh, well, they just said for the troublemaker to switch some tiles, but I don't hear any shuffling. I don't know, maybe there's not a troublemaker, or maybe it's just quiet. Maybe this person, I know I'm opening my eyes during the seer, so I can look at that. You know, there's a lot of different things that you can go off of. Now, with that being said, I get why it's a really fun, condensed hit of enjoyment. You know, versus the counter argument I'm going to make for it is that this is more of like a, this is like eating a Dorito, like a snack bag of Doritos, right? That flavor is so strong and it's so recognizable and it's really good and concentrated. But if I want a meal, I'm not going to go for a snack size bag of Doritos, right? Mm-hmm. I get why it's like, oh, I just want a snack. I want a quick fix. I want this. It's immersive, it's easy to play, but it definitely, you know, it's just a way to source friendly arguments. And that's really all the game is. So with that being said, I think it's pretty clear which one we agree both goes on.
Well, yeah, Mansions of Madness.
Mansions of Madness, yep.
Just for my One Night Ultimate Werewolf, and this is the only con that I really need to bring across to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, since we already agree that it's Mansions of Madness is going on.
Yep.
Is that it could be meta, like there is no tomorrow.
Yeah, which is the point. That's the point. It's like, well, you were the
problem though, because it's going to take people out of the game, and it's not going to allow for immersion if it gets meta'd.
Yeah, it that's. And I don't disagree with that, but it's basically also using it. That's true. Okay, that I don't disagree with. The metagaming is fun if done properly.
It is for the people who are metagaming game, not the ones that are just trying to play the game.
No. I mean, if that wasn't the case, then we wouldn't say Danny's a spy every time we play any social deduction game.
You know, that's because you're always the spy. That's the problem.
That's the point.
I mean, legitimately, the one time we played One Night Murder in Hong Kong, were the murderer.
Just so happened that way. Just so happened. I want to add in, T. Clark added in a couple of comments, going back to the previous debate, which might make us have some good counter arguments later on. T. Clark said, Nemesis definitely looked fiddly with some of the mechanics, but I love the horror movies. So if something that can give that sense of tension and dread and immersive experience for me trumps a bit of fiddliness. Couldn't agree more. I agree with you.
It does give you that tension. It does give you more of a horror feel than, say, Betrayal Legacy. I'm going to give you that.
Yeah. I was never nervous playing Betrayal Legacy, for sure. And so it says, I can't speak for Betrayal Legacy because today is the first I've heard of the Legacy version of Betrayal. Definitely check it out if you like it.
It's really enjoyable.
Yeah. And I apologize if the message is a little late and I arrived after you moved on. I'm still working on mobility. That's fine. Don't worry about it. So don't even apologize.
Because of the way things
appreciate
are
you joining in.
Mentions of Madness, we'll go up against Betrayal Legacy. So I'm just going to put these right over here.
All right.
All right. So the next one is going to be your draw. I'm just going to make sure I have the proper games this time.
Cool. All right. So this will be my argument.
Dead of Winter versus Ghost Stories, right?
That's right. Dead of Winter and Ghost Stories. Let's do this. This will be an interesting argument.
Yeah, I agree.
I've owned both of them. I currently own one of them.
I've played both of them. I only own one of them.
Yep.
Let's see what you get. You get the one you actually own.
Dead of Winter. Cool. Alright, so Dead of Winter. 100% is the horror board game as far as I'm concerned. It is. You are all pent up against the... Or you are all set up against the common threat, which are technically the zombies, but that's not really the big thing in this game. In this game, you are in your shelter. You are trying your best to get the resources you need to complete whatever scenario you are basing it on. I love how this game has a number of different scenarios you can play, level a number of different difficulties, and they even say like the rough time frames for it. That's not even to say the expansions, like the Warring Colonies or the Expand Alone, the Long Night version. Each of them has something like 30 to 40 characters that you can play as you're going out and experiencing these different areas, trying to get the resources you need to keep everybody in the colony surviving and to keep everybody safe against the common threat of dealing with these monsters. Now, not all characters are equal. That's the point, because you don't want them to be equal in a game like this. Some are just naturally going to be not as good as others, and that's really the hand that you're dealt and how to deal with them.
Sparky for the win, man. Sparky's
amazing. Or the monkey in the Long Night version. Holy cow, they're amazing.
I still prefer Sparky.
Sparky's cool.
He's the Wonder Dog.
He is the Wonder Dog, yeah. And that's a memorable moment. But what makes this even another level of interesting is that there is a possible hidden traitor in this game.
In fact, that's actually one of my pros.
That is absolutely a pro for this game, is because I get like why some people wouldn't want to be the hidden traitor, but it's so easy and so immersive to hide under the veil of it, of the whole game, and having everybody have their own secret objectives helps portray that. So what I mean by that is that some people,
everybody cannot be a traitor, but you still gotta hoard food to win.
Yeah, like you might need like 5 pieces of food in your hand that you've been saving from the colonies, which makes you look like the traitor whether you are or aren't. And you don't specify whether that's a hidden objective or what reason, but if somebody suddenly needs food and you're like, oh man, you have that conflicted moment in you saying, do I contribute this to the group or do they catch me on it? And then once per game, I think you can get
rid of somebody. There's a special character that can allow you to look at other people's hands.
Yeah. Well, not only that, you can exile somebody.
Oh, yeah. You can do that every round.
But that doesn't...
If you just exile too many people, you lose.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Because it lowers the morale and makes it questionable. So it's super immersive. It definitely has the horror theme to it. There are definitely moments of tenseness into it. But at the same time, it's just... But it also doesn't seem unachievable as you're playing. Like, you always feel like you still have... Just like one more push to try and do it.
Yeah, no.
Which is going
to
be.
I can't argue with it. This used to be my favorite game for a reason. Yeah. I really do love this game. And I am going to throw a pro out there because I think this is the selling point for Dead of Winter. It's a zombie game that has zombies, but it isn't about zombies. It's more about your interaction with the other players.
Yeah.
Yep. Zombies are there. They're just bad. They're going to do bad things to you, but it's not just about the zombies.
Yeah, exactly. It's about how everybody. Gets along.
Interacts with each other.
Yeah.
It's now, awesome. Here's my problems with Dead of Winter.
Okay.
And this is the reason why it's probably not even in my top 10 anymore. Maybe not even my top 20.
Wow.
One, it's a long game.
Yep.
It can overstay its welcome. Mm-hmm. You have a way where you can change it out and make it shorter or longer depending on what scenarios you're playing and stuff like that. That's fine. But it can be a long game and can overstay its welcome. And a big part of that, too, is there is a bit of downtime. When it's someone else's turn, depending on if you're playing with the full, I think it's 5 players, It can really make this game last very long when you're just trying to get to your turn or trying to get to the vote or trying to get to whatever you need to do. And that's a bit of an issue. Same reason why Eldritch Horror left my Halloween games.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes long games, and I like Twilight Imperium, but it leaves you involved the entire game.
Yeah.
Whereas this one, sometimes you get taken out depending on the downtime. Another thing is really prone to analysis paralysis. Do I play this food? Do I hold on to this food? Is this going to make me look like a betrayer? Or if I am in the betrayer, I need to keep this stuff because I need, but I don't want them to find out I'm the bad guy. So how do I meta this? It's a bit issue with that. It can be a bit lucky. And my big thing about this game is really fiddly because there's a lot of moving parts that you got to remember, especially the crossroad cards. Yep. Those are an important factor of the game that you have to remember. And 9 times out of 10, especially if you just started using and playing this game, you'll forget about those cards and be like, oh crap, I was supposed to draw that.
I forgot about that. That's super thematic, though, is all these scenarios that, like, it does make the game go quite a bit longer, but I love how enriching that thematic flavor is added into it.
It's just that people forget about it. The fiddliness makes you forget about things because you're concentrating on 50 other things going on in that game.
Yeah.
I need to go to the police station because I need to get weapons. We're getting way too many zombies here.
Yeah.
I need to go here. Oh, wait, I forgot to pull that card. Oh, wait, I got to pull this card. Oh, God, if I roll over here, I got to roll this dice because of the zombies. There's a lot of fiddliness to it.
Yeah.
Good. I enjoy the game. Like I said, it was my number one game for quite a long time. It's just, it's lost its luster, especially with all the games that are coming out now.
Sure. That's fair. Yeah, of course, you hardly hear people talk about it.
And I have to argue a game that's older than it.
So, yeah, not just slightly. Go ahead.
Also, it's one of the most mean games you're ever going to play, and that is Ghost Stories.
Yep.
What I do have to say, pro-wise, and this goes into the memorable moments of this kind of game, is it does give you that tension.
Yep.
There is a lot going on in that game that you're like, do we lose that? Or do we try to go save it, but then bad things could happen to me because something's coming up over there. Okay, where is that lady at? Where it can be beholden because of the way the deck of the cards play.
Sure.
But that tension in that game, there's a reason why a lot of people love this game. There's a reason why a lot of people don't like this game. It's mean. Mm-hmm. But when you win it, it's a stand-up moment. And I remember one of the few times I've ever played this, we played it at the shop, and I played it with the one guy nobody liked to play games with. Because he's you know who I'm talking about.
Yep.
One who is a tabletop quarterback trying to make everybody's moves and stuff like that, an alpha gamer if you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And what I like about this game, though, it does allow for that table talk when you're playing with older players and you're trying to discuss tactics, how you're going to play this thing out. And going back to that story, we're talking and we're listening to the guy, but we're ignoring him at the same time because we kind of know what we need to do. We ended up winning that game barely on the last turn. We were able to defeat that one moon goddess thing that you have to beat, the big spider lady, and able to finally save the town. And you heard a lot of whooping and laughing and shouting and people standing. We were clapping and basically jumping for joy because we beat one of the hardest games ever.
Yeah.
And that's why I think this is a phenomenal game in that sense. Out of these two, I probably play Dead of Winter more just because Ghost Stories is mean. It is by far the meanest game on this list.
Yeah. Yeah, and what you mean by mean is it's a fully cooperative game, and you're like you are effectively like monks, like defending your village,
in
right?
In a sense, we're kind of like samurais. Think of seven warriors, samurais in a sense, but
sure.
You're defending against ghosts rather than Ronin or bad guys.
Yeah, and then, but the thing is, you have to go through an entire deck of cards, and every single card is bad. Everything is bad. But then, to deal with them, there is a lot of strategy, like which tokens you get, which benefits you get, but it is dice roll. You have to roll the right combination of dice to do it.
Yeah, and it's not just that. The cards are mean. The dice rolls are mean. There's a lot more failures on the dice than there is success on the dice.
Yes.
And, it's a bit lucky. It's on that sense, but oh my god, does it produce some stand-up moments. And what is the thing that you like to say about co-ops? You need about a 20% win ratio for it to be a good co-op?
I feel like a good co-op has somewhere between a 25 to 33% win ratio.
Yeah, Ghost Stories is like a 0.1% win ratio.
Yeah, I never beat it the entire time I've owned it. And
I beat it once.
That's the only time I've ever heard of it being beaten by somebody I know directly.
I mean, you saw it.
Yeah, I mean, as far as stand-up moments, I give it that. And it does have strategy, but I think it's so beholden on the dice rolling, and
it really is.
Yeah.
There's a lot more strategy. I wanted to do a good job for Ghost Stories, and I think I did fair, but in all honesty, I think the better game is Dead of Winter.
Yeah. Because
there's strategy going on to it, but it's not, if I lose, I lose. Oh, well, but this one, you feel bad when you don't do something right in Ghost Stories.
Yeah, and let's clarify that too as well, because there are a lot of dice in Dead of Winter. However, your dice are your actions, and the number that's on them determine roughly which action you get. Some characters are okay, like if you can roll a really low number, a really high number, and you'll still be able to go fight with that character. That's fine.
Yeah.
It's not conditional.
Yeah, the numbers are more so just if they're going to be good dice for you. And what I like about the dice, about Dead Winter 2, is even if you roll bad, the dice are still useful. If you roll like a 1, 2, or 3, you can use it for barricades and stuff like
that. Yeah, exactly. And some characters can use like 2s and 3s as for like fighting or searching. And so it determines more which actions you'll be taking, not if they succeed, which is what Ghost Stories does.
Why I agree. There's a lot less arbitrary choices or stuff in this game. It's less luck.
Yeah, yeah.
I agree with you. Dead of Winter should move on. I think Ghost Stories is a good game. They have re-implemented, I think it's called Last Bastion.
Yeah.
And if you can't find Ghost Stories, give Last Bastion a try. I haven't tried it myself, but if you're interested in a very tough co-op game, there you go.
Yeah, like the one in a million wins. Yeah, that's going to be the one. All right. Cool. Been fairly mutual so far.
Sure I keep up with this here.
This is going to be the tricky one. I feel.
This is probably my favorite bracket in this one.
Mm-hmm.
And this one's going to hurt. And
I don't think it'll hurt. I'm happy with either of them.
Oh, now I'm happy if either of them move on. But I love both these games.
Yeah, it'll be compelling to see which ones go through. So this is my argument this time? Or this is yours?
Mine. Okay.
So you'll be starting us off with either Horrified or Mysterium. Let's see which one you'll be picking.
That's in my hand, the one that I have to argue starting instantly is
Horrified. Do it. This has worked out well.
those stories did not move on. So you got to go over here. I just got to keep a track of these.
That's fine.
Alrighty. So, Horrified. The pros that I have here, what I love about it is variable difficulty. That's why it's a good family weight game, is that you can make it easy if you're playing with kids, or you can make it harder if you're playing with more people. Or actual gamers, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I love about it. Also, a pro for me, it's the Universal Monsters. I love those classic films. I love the warning that they give you, and the box comes with that warning as well. The board itself, when you pull it out of the thing, it tells you, hey, this could be frightful and stuff like that. I love that kind of stuff. So we're talking about like graphic design and how it works for this game and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And the art. The thing is, it's simple mechanisms. That's why it's one of mm-hmm. the easiest games to play. I would say this is probably easier to play than Mysterium. There's a lot going on in Mysterium that we'll talk about here in a little bit. But because if you play Pandemic or any set of co-ops, it's real simple. You do some actions depending on what your character allows you to do. Then you draw a card and do some bad stuff based on what that card says. And vice versa and how things go.
Okay. Sorry. Go ahead and restate exactly what you just said.
Sorry about that to the live viewers.
Thank you, T. Clark.
So it's got simple mechanisms that you're familiar with. Mm-hmm. The pandemic stuff. Also. It's great to play with really good gamers, and it's great to play with young adults or even younger, 8, 9, 10-year-olds. It's easier to play than Mysterium. It's got just as much meaningful choices as Mysterium.
Mm-hmm.
For a $35 game, it has an amazing production value. And I think Prospero Hall really knocked it out of the park of this one. Replay value, there's 6 monsters in the thing, and depending on what difficulty you want to play it at, you have at least 2 playthroughs with it if you're playing it at the hardest difficulty. And
right.
That's just the monsters themselves. That's not just the characters that come in the game. And the game immersion, that's subjective, but I've had both really good with
yeah,
these games.
Really good moments
with it's really hard for me to battle these games out.
Yeah, and so I'll argue what few cons I have for Horrified, because I really do love Horrified.
Yeah, I have a few cons too, but
The only cons I can really think of is, honestly, it's a very simple game, and it is beholden to the random of the tokens that come out. You know,
as well as the dice roll.
As well as the dice rolls, yeah.
When the monsters have to do stuff.
Yeah, and then also so it's not completely arbitrary. It is more strategic than most people can give it credit for.
It's
more
strategic.
It's more strategic
than I expected it to be,
yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah, but not like adding in complexity, too. It's just that there is meaningful choices there. But it is just a family level gateway game, and I don't feel immersed because of that. Like yes, I'm battling different monsters that have cool mechanisms for their own thing, but I just don't feel it's super strong as far as theme. I just feel like I'm running around and then, oh, I'm avoiding this guy with mechanisms. You know, like that's really all it boils down to. Not saying that that's necessarily a bad thing. That's not what I don't want.
I think the big problem with it is you've never seen the Universal Monster movie, so it doesn't really feel as thematic as you think it would.
But I've seen Plan 9 from Outer Space, and if there's one thing that cinema has taught me... Anyway.
Plan 9 from Outer Space, really.
Yeah, Plan 9. Right, yeah, yeah. You know, when aliens come down and raise the dead. Anyway, so... It's one of the best movies ever. It's a cinematic classic. So...
Go on to Mysterium.
Mysterium, though. Mysterium is a really awesome game. It is also a cooperative game. However, it is a very asymmetric cooperative game. One player is playing as the ghosts, and the other players are conducting a seance, getting these visions from the ghosts, trying to figure out who done it, basically. It leads up a lot of tension to that final round, if you get to that final round of determining who was the one person who gave it. What makes it really great is that it has those really impressive moments where there's all this rich discussion based on what visions the ghost gave the players, and and it brings out like all sorts of weird references and weird assumptions that are conducted through these abstracted cards or weird surrealistic visions that create such a cool experience. It's like, well, this one is a vision of a hat or a rabbit wearing, you know, a monocle jumping through a doorway that's just by itself on a hill, like, and it's foggy out. Like, what, how does this allude to a baker or a pool that I need to find? And why does this vision pertain to me? And some people can say as simple as like, oh, the background is the same for both of them. Okay, that's fine. But that doesn't necessarily mean that that's what the person was doing. What makes this also really neat is that in a lot of asymmetric games that I've been playing, like I talked about this on the last episode, I played Apollo. Whoever's playing Mission Control is just kind of adjusting stuff and not really playing a game. They're just kind of like narrating the experience. Mysterium, yeah. As the ghost, you're playing a game still. You're thinking, how do I give this information without it being too confusing to this player who needs to know about this? Like, what in what part of my hand can I do this effectively? And also at the same time, they have to be listening to see, oh, well, they're going in the wrong path. I need to find a way to divert them from it or help reiterate that fact. It has such a cool mechanism with that alone that it's gotten me to like the idea of Dixit. Because I don't like Dixit as a game, and this made it truly fun. And that's why I feel this is going to be a really tough one for us, but if we break it down...
Can you hear my Mysterium comments?
Yes.
Alright, first off, if the ghost is not paying attention and not listening to what the party's talking about and trying to move them around, you could lose the game very simply. And the fact that you're playing this in 7 rounds, if you're not out of that first round by the 3rd round, you're going to lose the game.
No, I've seen comebacks that quick. But I don't disagree with you, but that's also not a fault of the game. That's a fault of the players.
I don't disagree, but it could take people out of the game once they realize, well, I'm still down here while everybody's up there. So, sure. Again, what we've talked about with, you're talking about the dice rolls and the bag pulls from Horrified.
Yeah.
This is very lucky when it comes to the cards, because how are you, the 7 cards that you have in your hand, how are you going to use them to interpret, hey, this is the guy that killed, or is one of the people that you think killed me. So let's go ahead and use these cards for it. I don't know how they're going to fit. I'm only allowed this much. I only get, depending on what level you're playing at, I only have so many of these ravens just to dump cards out of my hand. So it can become a little bit of an issue when it comes to that.
Yeah.
It's really lucky based on your card draws. And the thing is, whereas you got the bag pull and the dice pull rolls and stuff like that from Horrified, the card stack is like this.
Yeah.
Whereas the bag pull, when things are out, they're out of the bag until the bag is empty. So you have more likely to get better stuff on the board when you need it.
Yep.
Whereas you still got a stack like this. If you dump cards, you got a stack like this.
but not necessarily, though, because different cards mean different things to different people. And that's what makes it interesting. I don't know if any card is bad.
You're beholden to that luck, how you use it to interpret. What you are thinking in your mind doesn't equate to what they're thinking in their mind. So you have to, and sometimes there's just cards in your hand where you're just like, this doesn't fit anything.
This don't make no sense. I don't know what you're talking about.
Another one that I have about it is when you're the ghost board sometimes can make you a little, especially if you're the first time ever playing the ghost, it can throw you out where you're trying to be like, oh crap, who did I give cards to? Or, crap, am I giving the cards to the right person? Am I not reading this right?
Right.
And that's going to be a little bit of an issue. And my biggest con to Mysterium, the thing I hate about this game, and I love this game, is the end game. The fact that you have to vote on other people's thoughts, this way you can see more of what the end game is going to be. You have to get to, what is it, 7 to see all 3 cards for the end game?
Right.
I hate that.
Right.
It really is like you have this great game, and what I guess you could say, like the first round going really well. It's fun, it's intriguing, you're trying to deduce what's going on, and then you get to the 3rd round, and I only get to stare at 1 card, so how is my vote going to help anything?
Yeah.
That takes me out of it. That really bothers me.
I, you know, and that makes sense because of, like, Have you seen the preview for Mysterium Park, the new game coming out?
Yep.
They took that out.
And I like what they do in Mysterium Park about, we're like, oh, you picked the right guy? Well, he's no longer the guy who killed me. You're trying to figure out who did it.
Yeah, you're trying to eliminate the others, right? T. Clark wanted to add something to the conversation. I thought it was a very valuable point. He said, this all kind of goes back to what I said about Horrified. It's mechanically simple enough for anybody to pick up and be able to play it in a handful of minutes. Not enough depth strategically to keep people, if not fully immersed, then engage with what is going on so they can plan. Yeah, I completely agree with that.
I can't argue against that in all honesty.
There are a few of these that I feel are pretty clear as far as our categories. I do want to break this down into the categories. First off, art and production does go to Mysterium. 100%. Not to put down Horrified, but it's just the game is based on the art.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you. Yeah. I just want to make a point about Horrified. The fact that they decided to use some of those cards in black and white, it makes me giggle.
Yes, I love that. That's awesome. And immersion also goes to Mysterium as well, because that is an incredibly immersive game. You do feel like it's like you're getting these weird visions.
I agree with you.
What do they mean?
Till the end game.
Till the end game. Yes, agreed. Agreed with that. Meaningful choice is very clearly Horrified, because that is a strategy game. Mysterium is more of like a really interesting gamer's party.
Honestly, it's Clue with it's a guessing game with art.
Yeah. Now, as far as ease of play, and hear me out on this first.
I'll listen to you.
Yeah. While I do think that technically Mysterium is an easier game, because all you're doing is looking at some cards, making a guess. That's technically all you're doing. I'm going to give ease of play to probably Horrified, because first off, likelihood of getting to the table, Universal Movie Monsters versus conducting a seance. A seance idea can be very off-putting to some people based on their beliefs, which I totally get. And AP prone, that is a game about AP prone.
That's straight up Mysterium right there.
Which is why they have a timer. Yeah, which is why they have a timer. Now, I would give Mysterium simplicity because it's just you're just guessing. But the other two, Horrified. Which means it comes down to replay value. And this is where we have to be fair. Minimum number of plays for full experience.
This is kind of tough for me, because what are we equating to the minimum number of plays for full experience? If you see all the cards, if you see all the characters, that kind of stuff.
Because
if you play Mysterium once, you know how to play Mysterium the second time.
Right.
Or Horrified, each monster has their own mechanisms. The creature does this, Dracula does this. You have to meet these before you can kill them and stuff like that.
So let's think about the variability and what it adds to the theme, because both of them you understand how to play by the end of the first game, for sure. The variability in each of these is the different cards, weapons, and locations, or characters' locations and weapons for Mysterium, and different art, but that's just kind of reissued of the same thing, whereas each of the monsters in Horrified, they're very different mechanistically of what your objective
is. Each character that you're playing play very differently.
Yeah.
I can be the explorer that can bounce around all over the place, or I can be the mayor who gets 5 actions instead of 4.
Yeah. Whereas
they feel different.
So I would give minimum number of plays to Horrified. Player range range, scale, and time, that's Mysterium, because it always plays the same amount of time because of the timer, same number of rounds, but it plays 2 to 7 players, which is...
Honestly, I'm not gonna lie about this. I would never play this game with 2 people.
No, yeah, it's not that great. And then
it's a good intimate party game, because you can hold up to 7 people.
And then as far as additional content...
That's Mysterium.
That's Mysterium, because they do have 2 expansions.
2 expansions.
So...
No, Horrified could get expansions. I don't know how you would do it. Add the Blob? I don't know.
Yeah, the Blob, the thing. Adam's family in there? I don't know. Like, that'd be cool. Yeah. Like, there's ways to do it, and we're secretly hoping for that, but I think because of this, just barely...
Mysterium moves
on. Mysterium moves
on. As much as I hate it. Because no. Horrified is probably my favorite game on this list.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like that one, the very reasonable caveat about the end game that you put with Mysterium, I think is might be its downfall later. We'll see. We will see.
Some ones that you figured were going to go on, and then we had a couple upsets. Betrayal Legacy yeah. beating Nemesis at number one, as well as Mysterium picking out Horrified, which for a game that's only been there a year has really climbed on BGG.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, Horrified is it's doing a great job so far. I feel like it's been in my life this whole time because it's just it's so familiar now.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So, before we move on to the semifinals, and we'll give you the brackets for those.
Okay.
The games that have been eliminated. Nemesis, which was our number one seed, was four in the vote at 9, which is interesting because it was tied with Betrayal Legacy, so fan vote would have screwed us.
Yep, yep, it would have.
Then moving on to One Night Ultimate Werewolf. It was our least favorite game voted on. In fact, it got less votes than some of the add-on games because it got absolutely zero.
Yep. Yeah, that's fair. That was our lowest seed.
Ghost Stories, the 6th seed that was eliminated by Dead of Winter, had 6 votes, sitting in 6 out of the 8 games. We have a tie for 4, just so people know. And then finally, Horrified, which was just eliminated, was the number one game voted on at 23.
Wow.
Oh yeah, Phantom of the Opera. That's actually not a bad idea.
Yeah. Yeah, T-Cart just said Phantom of the Opera expansion, or even go beyond and go Freddy, Chucky, Pumpkinhead, or Pinhead. That'd be super cool.
The only problem with those, and I agree those would be awesome, is that they're all owned by different people. New Line owns Freddy. Paramount, I believe, owns Jason. Chucky is, I think, New Line. I can't remember exactly. And Pinhead is New Line as well. So you could do that, but they're not owned by Universal.
Yeah. Cool. Good suggestions. Yeah, I forgot about Phantom of the Opera. I always think of The Blob, for sure.
Now, Phantom of the Opera is considered a Universal monster movie. It just depends on which one you want to use. There's one in the 40s that is considered a Universal monster movie, and then there's one back in the 20s that technically isn't.
Oh, well, yeah, then they would use the 40s one for sure. But then there's also The Fog. Wasn't The Fog a Universal movie?
I think so. I know The Blob is. I don't know about The Fog.
Okay. Well, I might be wrong. You know more about movies than I do, for sure. All right, so since we've taken already a few breaks.
let's move on with this. Cool. So next up is the number 2 seed, Mansions of Madness 2nd Edition, facing the number 8 seed, Betrayal Legacy.
Okay, this is going to be interesting, because...
And you want to tell the other bracket while I...
Yep, and then while you're loading that up, then after that we will be arguing Dead of Winter, our now number 2 seed, which was originally number 3 seed, versus Mysterium, which was our number 5 seed.
Alright, so that last one was me, so this is you.
Alright, let's do it.
So, your game is Mansions of Madness.
Darn. Alright, no, I like Mansions of Madness. Out of all of the Arkham games, with the exception of Elder Sign is my favorite. This is my second favorite. This is what convinced me to start getting back into the games. Like, I was already done after you showed me Eldritch Horror. I'm like, nah, I'm out 100% now. And then I played Mansions of Madness. I'm like, maybe there's something to this because of the system that they created for it.
The thing about Mansions of Madness, the app integration just makes things so much easier.
Yeah, exactly. This, I really do feel, will have to go down to us breaking down the brackets because they're both a very similar concept of game. They're both... Like, combat is determined by dice rolling. They're both legacy in a way. Because Mansions of Madness is scenario-based, whereas campaign-based, whereas Betrayal Legacy is legacy, exactly. This is going to be interesting.
Horrified off my list here.
Yeah, take it off. good riddance, I guess. I don't know. I love Horrified. but I'm confused by which one will legitimately go on, because Mansions of Madness does have that beautiful ability to have so many scenarios added in. It has the puzzles, which are really intriguing.
And the thing about Mansions of Madness, too, is because of the app integration, they just have to add app integration with the maps that you already have or the monsters you already have.
They can just add story content to it no matter what. Yeah. Which is awesome. It's a huge advantage over technically a legacy thing that they've poured over. You can't technically continue it. Even though this one you can play multiple times, you're not going to have additional content necessarily. Engines of Madness, it's a really cool game, and it boils down to it being a very simple idea. The app tells you where the board's laid out. You go from room to room, trying to determine how to solve the scenario that you're given. The only drawback that I would really give to Mansions of Madness is that at the beginning of the game, you really are wandering aimlessly, which I know is going to be used as a counterpoint to Betrayal Legacy because they're almost the same game. The biggest drawback to Mansions of Madness is that it's H.P. Lovecraft, which is also, it's a double-edged sword. It's a big enriching storyline from a really awful person. So I don't know, man. That's my argument for Mansions of Madness.
My biggest argument for Mansions of Madness, I mentioned it on the other bracket, is that you're beholden to that app. As much as I love it, how long is it going to be supported? How long is Fantasy Flight going to support it? Look what they've done with the LCG.
Yeah.
Once that game's dead.
Yep.
And once they're not done, releasing they're done. Expansions for it, are they going to stop keeping that expansion or that app? And as technology advances, are they going to keep upgrading that app to work on or newer technology? Or
is it who just knows? Going to be a problem? We don't know.
And another thing is there's lots of moving parts. You have all these monsters. Luckily, the app allows you to take care of most of it.
Yes.
And it, at times, some of the scenarios can be really long. It can overstay its welcome.
Sure. Yeah.
Those are my big negatives for it. I love the game. I think it's my favorite Arkham horror game outside the LCG, and that's only because I can play the LCG by myself without having this big old build.
Yeah. Yeah, this is fair. So,
the one I gotta argue for is Betrayal Legacy, and this is gonna be tough because I love both these games.
Mm-hmm.
As you said before, it's a legacy game. And what I like about that is that it's one of the few legacy games that you don't have to play with everybody all the time. They can pick up and they can drop out. You start the game with four players. Hey, a fifth player wants to join in. He can jump in. You want to start the sixth game and you can only get three people to show up? You can't. They just miss a generation. That's it. Yeah. There's no penalty for them not doing there. I like the fact that there are some stuff that you can really... I don't want to get into spoilers here, but if certain things come up, you can put your family's legacy on it, and it can be grateful for you later on.
Yeah.
I do like that aspect where you can make changes not just to your family, but to things that are happening into the game, and it could be both a negative and a positive as you're going through the game. It just depends on what you're doing.
Yeah, it definitely changes the future outcome of the very end of the story versus, like... of the scenarios that you're playing with Mansions of Madness that I don't, and forgive me if I'm wrong, I'm not sure has any carrying effect from one game, one scenario to another.
Not that I know of. I think in the campaign it does. I've only played individual games themselves.
Okay.
Because it's just different scenarios, but with the campaign integration, it's a possibility. I know you can in Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
So, assuming the campaign integration does it, but I haven't played the campaign, so I can't make a judgment.
All right, then let's break it down to the categories, just to be a little more fair with them. Art and production, I would give that to Mansions.
I would give that to Mansions as well.
Yeah, because the miniatures in Mansions are quite nice. And then the art. The
app art is creepy as heck. And then what we're not adding onto this one with the art and production, if you're using the app, you hook it up to a Bluetooth speaker or just using the speaker that's on your mobile device, it's got ambience music that you don't have to add to the game.
Yeah, that's true. Cool. So then art and production goes to Mansions of Madness.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I would give Ease of Play to Betrayal Legacy.
Yeah. Yeah, because you don't need to learn everything on the onset. Everything builds out. But that's also the same thing, is everything builds out in Mansions of Madness. I'm struggling to find a difference that I can compare the two. other than the haunt and the rule book explaining explicitly what to give.
For me, the difference is Betrayal Legacy. It's simple. You're